I want to welcome you to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear. It's probably going to be a little bit quieter today. This is the first time I've got to do a show without actually bottling lure at the same time. It's early in the morning. Most of the time I do this later at night. My wife is gone, so I'm taking advantage of having a clear house where I can rant and rave and have a good time. And I had to get out to the shop. I think it was 19 degrees this morning, which isn't that bad. Except what I need to make today in the lure shop has got to warm up because it gets solid when it gets below a certain temperature. So I've got the heater on and stuff next to the heat, and I've got a few that's actually in a vehicle in the sun trying to use that like a greenhouse because it is a sunny day to warm up some of these ingredients. So I get to actually talk without bottling. So this is going to be kind of cool for me. It's almost like having a day off. I want to start off, guys. I know it's getting on Christmas. You know, really enjoy your family. If you live in one of these communist states where they say you can't have Christmas, there's a nice little thing that you should keep in mind. If this was 1776 and they shot birds back then, that's what they would be saying to that. Don't waste memories over a political agenda from one side or the other. Go have fun with your family. Now, saying that, before we got, I think it's going to be a good show for people today. I've got a couple of emails that I'm going to go over. Great things in both of them. Talking mostly about coyotes today. That seems to be what most people are into because that's where what money there is. That's where it's at. And I thought it'd be, instead of answering these two back, It's easier for me to do it on the show because I can get into more detail and stuff like that. Just keep in mind, guys, when you send me an email or a PM or something like that, if it's a very complicated thing, a lot of times just because of the time of year and what's going on in my business and trying to get outside and all that, I can't write a book back. So try to keep your questions a little more, and these aren't bad, but try to keep them where it's more specific and less general. And then I think I might be able to help you out a little bit better. Because if it's just too much work and I don't have time, it'll get passed over. Not because I don't want to respond to you, just because I don't have time. Like, I don't answer the phone after 5. I don't answer the phone before 8. Because I guarantee you, on Christmas Day, I will get a minimum of 6 or 7 calls Christmas Day wanting to know how to catch something. And I don't pick up the phone on holidays because it's just got to the point where I've got to be able to spend time with my wife, and she deserves that. And that's now the rules. That's as CEO of Predator Control Group and CEO of Clint, that is the rules, and I do not break them. There is some weird crap going on, and we're about to get to trapping, but I just want to discuss something, because if what I think is going to happen, or possibly could happen, happens, I just want you to, as a listener to this show, to be ready for it and kind of understand what it is. First off, all the stuff with COVID, I do believe the virus is real. I don't believe it's what they're saying it is. I don't believe the deaths are what they are. You know, because if you get shot and you had COVID, it's a COVID death. It was like 6% of the deaths the CDC came out with that didn't have other factors, you know, like getting ran over by a train or a plane wreck or dying of cancer, which you're going to anyway, or you were 97 years old and you were going to be passing away anyway in hospice. It was 6%, so it was actually less than 11,000 people died strictly from COVID in America. So that's, you know, that's nothing. I mean, it's sad for those people, but it's nothing on a scale when you consider 200 or 325 or 30 million people, whatever we have now. Counting aliens, probably 400 million. So it's pretty small, but there's some things coming out, and I'm not going to sit here and say you should or should not take this vaccine. What I am going to say, guys, this is one of those things I would highly, 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 highly recommend that you go and do your own research. You can look up of why Australia is not going to be doing this vaccine. Now, you're gonna have to wade through the normal censorship bullcrap agenda that's in all of our media right now. And people are trying to say they're not doing it because they had a false positive for AIDS from people that were taking the virus. Now, if you have no brain and you just believe what you read, you may look at that and go, oh, they just spooked because they had AIDS show up and people taking the virus and it was a false positive. Do you really think if it was a false positive that that's why Australia is scrapping $750 billion worth of the viruses? Or $750 million? It's a lot, whatever it was. I think it's $750 million. Over a false positive? Keep in mind, where you get your news, if it has anything to do with big news at all, including Google, I would start going to something like as weird as DuckDuckGoose to start looking for information for this, so you can get out of the propaganda span. It's a little bit better. It's not as good as Google, but you'll be amazed what you find different. The other thing in England is there was a video I sent some friends of mine, and it was more of a joke, and I said on the bottom, I don't know if this is real, but it's just funny. And a girl from England was saying that guys that were taking the vaccine over in England were getting ED. And since Pfizer's making the drug, don't worry about it, because Pfizer also makes Viagra, and they got you covered on the back end. And I was looking at it as a joke, just because in our world today, that's kind of the way it is. Well, my friend started looking into it, and sure as crap, ED is another one. And another report came out from doctors saying that a female that takes this, it has a tendency to attack her uterus. Now, the conspiracy side of things, and conspiracies can be real or not real, I don't know, but when Bill Gates is involved in all this crap, and he's talked about depopulation by vaccines, and you can look that up too, be easier on DuckDuckGoose than it will be on Google. He talks about using vaccines to depopulate the planet. So if you're screwing with, if you get hard or not, and you're screwing with the uterus of a woman, you can see how population control could probably happen. This was actually from several different articles where this was coming out when I looked into it, and I was like, holy crap. The other thing with the virus is that, and you can look this up too, do your own research. Don't believe me. I could be sitting here, sniffing paint or something, making crap up. A lot of people are getting Bell's palsy, like where half of your face is like a stroke and you can't close your mouth and you can't talk and you can't move your tongue right and your eyes are all, like lopsided. It's a different time. But what they're saying is, yeah, they're getting Bell palsy, but it's only temporary for a few days. Well, holy crap. If something is showing positives for AIDS, ED, can possibly hurt a woman's uterus, and it's causing Bell's palsy, I think I may wait a while, because I think I've got a better chance at 99 point something percent survival rate, especially since I'm trying to stay healthy, I'm getting plenty of vitamin D, I'm being active, not obese anymore, at least not by fat content. I think I'll take my chances, but maybe for someone that's older, 70s and 80s, that's a whole different story. So just use your brain before you let someone stick something in you, because this is the first time, and you can research this is not a normal virus vaccine. This somehow actually changes the DNA in your DNA in your body. The first time. It kind of seems to me like I don't want to be the first one trying that out. But I'm going to leave that up to you. The second thing going on in our world, guys, I want you to understand there's been some things going on, and you're really hearing anything about it on Fox or the main news channels. Google's not going to let anybody really talk about it. It's not going to be on a lot on YouTube, and because as soon as they find it, they're going to get rid of it. It's not going to be on Twitter. It's not going to be on Facebook. It's not going to be on Instagram. because they're basically not letting anybody have a different opinion besides what the, I guess you could say, the elite people are saying. But if you look at the language that's coming out of some of the people from Trump, and you can go back and look at some of the executive orders that were signed over election fraud and outside interference in 2017, and you can look where the new Secretary of Defense pulled in all special ops to be directly under him and not go through the normal military chain of command, which I don't know of any time that's ever happened. A lot of soldiers are being brought back in. There's a lot of talk about the Navy being off our coast in many different areas where they're normally not. The language from Trump's agenda about China, Russia, and Iran interfering in our elections with the Minion machines with certain China chips in there being used to the internet. The server for Dominion was in Germany. We had to send special ops over there to get them. An absolute, to me, unquestionable try at a massive fraudulent election from enemies, foreign and domestic. Trump is trying to go through the courts. The courts are being big wusses. Almost said something different there. There's still some chances of the courts doing something, but I think they're afraid to do anything. You've got December 6th coming up where there's probably going to be some games about letting the states choose the electors because of all the fraud. Of course, the news is going to go crazy if that pulls through. And Trump said the most interesting thing day before yesterday: we're trying to do this the easy way. I guess we'll have to do it the hard way. And I believe the hard way is the correct way, but I think it's going to be a serious, destructive way to the American culture for a while. I believe what Trump is going to do, or he's setting up to do, is to claim the Insurrection Act. And anybody that had anything to do with fraud, the military is going to be involved on U.S. soil, which we're not used to seeing. And they're going to be nabbing people, which we're not used to seeing our military do on our shores, which is what we do on other shores. And they're going to take them to military tribunals because under the act, it's no longer in civil or criminal court, which means a judge is irrelevant outside of the criminal court. And you can actually go and find resources where there's many dates that have been blocked off completely empty, which is very odd in the military courts. So if he pulls the Insurrection Act, which I think is the correct thing, because you want to talk about draining the swamp, it would do it. Anybody, it's going to take, there's no habeas corpus, because everything would be under martial law, which includes you, includes me, and includes your children. But what that does is that turns loose all of the technology to go and find the bad guys inside of America like we do in foreign countries. And then people are going to be taken into custody and taken to a military court, which is the last place you want to be, because it's a lot more simple in a military court. Did you or did you not do this act? No one cares why. They're not going to let lawyers play the normal lawyer games. You're not going to be playing, is my judge a conservative or a liberal or a, you know, propagandist for a party? It's going to be extremely different. Now, that's what I think he's setting up to do. He may or may not do that because, like I said, this is going to rock America unlike anything else. And he may decide that the disturbance and reaction from that could be worse than the election. And I don't even think Trump's doing this so he can win. I think he's doing this because if the courts don't listen to fraud and the states could keep committing fraud, and you can't go to courts and you can't go to Congress and you can't go to senators, the only thing left for people to do over major issues is lock and load. And with the courts not looking at any of the massive evidence, like I don't know where in the world these thousands of eyewitnesses no longer count, because that used to be the gold standard in court was eyewitnesses, and now they're just turned away like it's nothing. And it's setting a precedence that the only way you're going to win an election is you got to figure out how to outfraud the other party. And I don't think Trump wants that to be America, because it's what happened this November was like what happens in Venezuela. But if he pulls the Insurrection Act, and he's always talked about draining the swamp, may have God rest on their souls, because they think that there, a lot of people think that they can just lawyer up and get out of it, like a lot of stuff with Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and all these, you know, really rich guys that think they can do anything inside of a military court. None of that matters. And when you get a sentence from the military court, it's not like in a civil court, because it's for treason under the Insurrection Act. That's not something Americans are used to seeing. So if this happens, you need to be a little bit prepared. You need to make sure that you got gas in your vehicles full, probably have a little on hand. I would make sure you've got 10, 14 days worth of food and water and drinks for you and your family. Just basic stuff like that, a way that that you can survive without being too disturbed, without being able to go to a store. Because if he calls martial law, which if he does this, I think it'll be after January 6th, he's going to lock down the country in martial law, so people can't run as easy. So you're probably not going to be able to travel. You're probably not going to be able to go to work. Have some cash on hand, different things like that. I'm not saying this to scare anybody, but this is what it looks like Trump is setting up to do because of all of the outside interference and inside interference on our election. And he's the commander in chief, and he can. Will this mean he will be our president afterwards? I have no earthly idea. If this happens, we're going into an area that no one probably really knows the recourse or the actions that's going to happen. But if he does this, the left is going to go absolutely berserk. And if you live in a city that's especially liberal, I would suggest as soon as you hear something like this, go to a friend's house for about a week or so, because liberals are probably going to try to burn in every single thing down that they can. Just an observation from a redneck that's been in the military from the hills of Tennessee. Take it or leave it. Now I want to thank our sponsors, which is F&T Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Great company to deal with. I do a lot of business with them. I have for years. I know the owners, friends with them. Really good people. They are getting swamped with orders, and they're getting them out as fast as they can, which I don't even see how they're doing what they're doing, but they're doing a tremendous job trying to get everybody their products. That's F&T Fur Harvesters. Second one is Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. Jeb has a full trapping supply line. He's got snare stuff. A lot of time he has meat, sells glands, buys fur. He's just the all-around guy that you'll want to know if you're a trapper. Really good guy to deal with. I personally do business with him all the time, too. Next one is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They have a full trapping supply line. They're the ones that ship out my stuff, if that tells you how much I trust them. They make copper trap tags. They got all kind of ADC traps. They've got stuff for fish and bear and hog and deer, all kind of predator calls. You know, of course, the copper trap tags and all the trapping stuff you'd ever want. Funky trap tags and supplies. And last but not least, Dunlap Lures, which Jeff is a good friend of mine, and he makes really good lures. So it's somebody, it's a lure brand that you can trust. And if I wasn't using my own, that's exactly who I'd be buying it from, would be Jeff. And you know that you're going to get quality with him, because he actually looks at the lures he makes, kind of like I do, where it is needs to be the same and strong and productive for the trapper, instead of something you put in a bottle and maybe make a few bucks. So that's Dunlap Lures. Now, get to trapping. Clint, love the trapping radio show. This is from LK. I'm not going to say your name. Awesome information and content. I have a question to Coyote Tribal Ways. My part of the country consists of large, wide open ag fields surrounded by square mile sections. Plowed fields are often intersected with drainage ditches, fence rows, and the occasional tree line. The tracks and scat are often hard to spot as farmers typically till these fields. I am working through which side of the travel corridors, ditches, fence rows, and tree lines coyotes prefer to move down and why. My thoughts are, and this is pretty smart. One, coyotes would travel along the downwind side in order to smell prey hiding within. That is true. That I would say if the travel is the same on both sides as far as the ground, you know, easier on the coyote, and there's only one coyote going through there, he would be on the downwind side. My objection with just looking at it that way is when you see coyotes in these big open fields, like say Indiana, Iowa, some in Mississippi, big Midwestern farm ground type things, Western Tennessee, when there is a drainage ditch, that's where pretty much all the food has to be. So the animals that are predators know that. Most of the time, though, you're going to have coyotes that travel both sides at the same time, and they will stay almost in line. Kind of like if you're moving across an objective in the military. You may have 5, 10, 15, 20 meters in between you, but you're in a line and you're moving forward. That's the way these coyotes do, and they do it in a trot when you watch them. They're not walking normally. They're trying to cover as much ground as possible so they can smell something or jump something. So I know what you're saying, okay, about trying to figure out which side is the best. In that particular situation, I would say both sides are the best. Because when one coyote gets caught on the other coyote is going to realize something happened, and he's going to be moving around a lot. And his attention is going to be on the coyote that's caught. And the coyote's not going to be acting right. It's not going to be smelling right. The other coyote's going to be confused. You get, just like you get a person in that type of situation, they do things they normally wouldn't do as easily because their brain's not working right. Because there's fight and flight, and they know this other one. They're curious. So when you have a set on both sides and you catch one on the other, they're going to circle and run back and forth where they're at, trying to get a visual and try to, because they trust their nose more than anything else, they're going to try to smell what's going on. They're going to try to figure it out. And it gets just like a person that panics over something. They do stuff they would normally wouldn't do. And if you've ever been around people that panic without training, they have a hard time, you know, like doing simple tasks with their hands or using memory and stuff like that. And I'm pretty sure coyotes do the same thing. So even if there's one coyote that's on the downwind side, and I like the way you're thinking because you're thinking about the animal, but if there's just one coyote on the downwind side, there's a good chance that you're going to have another coyote come down on that other side somewhere during the night, because there's all this commotion and they're trying to figure out what's going on. If you wanted to be super slick and you wanted to make sure that you could catch and take advantage of them, this is something the old wolfers used to do. They would on purpose select places that they could control a little bit to pin an animal, to get the chaos and the curiosity up, to cause coyotes to be easierly caught in the other sets. So if you've got, say you've because you don't have a lot of locations in an area that you're talking about, you got some tree lines, you got some fence lines, and you got drainage ditches. There ain't a whole lot there. That really open spot, you might as well not even consider for much. If you wanted to think of this in terms of a wolfer, he would definitely have traps on both sides. But what the wolfer would do, which most people today will not, because they don't trust this, because they don't trust what an animal does, is they would probably, on the downwind side of the downwind side trap, so you follow what I'm saying? So you got the trap on the downwind side of the fence, the ditch. They're going to go downwind of that to put in a second trap, because you don't have all the travel ways that someone like in Tennessee has, or Louisiana, and in different places like that. So they're going to go downwind of the downwind trap, and they're going to put, normally it would be more of a flat set, more of using gland and musk and different things like that, not so much a big dirt hole set, but about 30 to 40 yards away from the trap you think you're going to pin the animal the first, which is on the downwind side coming from this structure. So when the animals start coming around to try to figure out what's happening with that coyote, and since they trust their nose, what is the coyote that's coming in going to do? He trusts his nose way more than he does his eyes. He's going to go to the downwind side of the caught coyote. At first, he's going to try to find high ground, and I don't know exactly, you're not telling me, yeah, I don't see exactly where you're from, so I don't know exactly what the ground is like there. But the first thing he's going to try to do is find high ground to get a better view of what's going on. Then he's going to use, if he can't find that, and it's too far away, and he still can't figure it out, he's going to come in from the downwind side because he wants to smell any threat that's coming his way. So what wolfers would do is they would try to find the perfect place to pin the coyote. Then they would go downwind of that 30, 40 yards, and they would put in another set. I can tell you from trapping in places like southern Missouri, in Mississippi, where you have a lot of mud, and I would say if you've got snow, not like really deep snow, but you've got tracking snow, and you start looking for this when you catch a coyote, you're probably going to start seeing what I'm saying, and it's going to start making a whole lot more sense. When we put those sets downwind of the downwind side, and we catch a coyote on the trap that we wanted to, and we still pick up another one on the one that's on the downwind side, you can track that in that black mud in Mississippi and southern Missouri in the Delta if it's muddy. And you can see what happens. The coyote is coming from a distance because of this commotion. And he doesn't come straight in most of the time. He comes and he goes, like he'll go to the left for a while and back to the right, then left, then back to the right as he's coming in. It's not a straight line. And what he's doing is he's trying to catch the scent cone of whatever's going on. And the closer he gets to that other trap, the more in line he is directly downwind of that other trap. So 30, 40 yards away in a big open field, like it sounds like you have, that coyote can come in from many different areas, but he's going to end up on that downwind side because he's going to trust his nose. So that's one thing that you can do. And until you start doing this, I understand you're going to think it's a waste of time because there's nothing out there. But trust the animal and what the animal's going to do. Number two, canines would choose the side with cover in order to stay hidden. And now, I'm assuming what you're talking about with this is if there's like a road or there's a farmhouse or subdivision, they're going to stay on the opposite side to stay out of sight of danger. And I think that's true. So that's one thing to keep in mind. See, what I like about what you're doing is you're really engaging, thinking about how a coyote's going to be looking at this situation. An unplowed side may be chosen over a plowed side for ease of travel because of the large uneven dirt clogs. Yeah, I think so. We're going to do the same thing. If ground's been just, you know, deep teal and turned over, it's not easy to walk on. It's not easy to run on. And I think a coyote's going to choose the easier side. So I think it's good. Now, on the plowed side, if there's like on a fence or a tree line or something like that, if they're not plowing all the way up to the structure and you've just got a couple of feet, well, that's something that you need to think about as being a coyote travelway, because they'll get really tight to stuff when they're hunting it. The high side of a fence line may be taken if coyotes prefer elevation, or the low side may be taken if they can remain hidden. See, this is great thinking, and it's absolutely true. Coyotes love being on the high side. They can see things. Coyotes, people think coyotes are these almost like wolves. And they're not even a smaller version of a wolf. Like a fox is not a smaller version of a coyote. They're totally different animals. Their mindset is totally different. Coyotes, for the most part, walk on eggshells all the time. Their instincts or survival keeps them at a high sensitivity about what's going on. So if they can stay on the high side of a fence, yeah, they're going to. Or it could be where they're lower. Now, one thing I want you to keep in mind, LK, about this is, even though the fields are big, if there's guys that hunt coyotes where you're at, like on snowmobiles, and y'all may not get along because they use dogs and you're a trapper and this, but if you know some of those guys that you can go with, you're going to learn something very quick about big open territory and coyotes. Travelways are easier to talk about. Drainage ditches, fence lines, tree lines, you know, game trails, stuff like that. It's easier to show on video, and it's easier to explain in something that's vocabulary-based, like a podcast. But if you go out with these guys that hunt coyotes, you're going to see their travelways are drastically different than your travel ways that you're looking for as a trapper. Let's say that you pull up a Google Earth of a farm, and you've got these big open fields. What you need to look at in these big open fields, and if you can see it all where you're at, or you know, drive around a little bit, that's good too. But if you've got a chunk of trees that's being left and a tree line on the other side, where you're going to find that most of your dog hunters kill their coyotes is where they're coming from a tree line to a clump of trees. Or they're using a either structure like a gully, or could be a ridge line depending on the depth of the snow. But they go from one bigger structure to another a lot. And if you get out in the snow, you'll see this yourself. So yeah, they use the fence lines and the ditches and all that stuff like what we think about when we're talking about trapping. But they also go from, even if it's a half a mile apart, they'll go from one tree line to the other. And most of the time, if it's not a perfect square and there's any movement of the square going out in the field, that's most time where they're going to come out. Or there, if you got more of a terrain that rolls, they're going to go across a low spot as long as it's not in water. And they're going to go from bigger cover to bigger cover in the draw, kind of. Not like a western draw per se, but just where it dips down. Because they can stay hidden and they can go from one place to the other, so they can find more ditches and fence lines and tree lines that they can hunt. So when you're looking at ground, this is why Google Earth is so cool. You can pull up where you're trapping. And you can see more from the air than you'll be able to see on the ground, because you'll be able to see more of it. And look at cover to cover travel ways too. And if you're not sure which one it is, after 3 or 4 days of snow, if you live in the north, or if it's really muddy, you take a four-wheeler, a lot of times you will find tracks going from cover to cover across big open fields that make no sense to a trapper. You know, and then you can set on the edge of either side, you can set it up in the middle. It really makes no difference at that point because you're covering the travel way. But that's something that I would definitely look at in your type of area. And you have to be a little more open-minded to see that, unless you start going with guys that run down coyotes with snow machines. You're going to see it a lot. And then it's going to pop open to you a lot easier. So if you can, you know, ride with them or talk to them and see what happens. I believe one trap on each side is probably a good idea until I learn more. That being said, I would like to hear what you consider when setting this type of linear structure in open farm country. Do you feel I am off with my thinking? Thanks for advice and thoughts. He says that, you know, could be discussed on Trapping Radio, so that's one of the reasons we're doing it. Yeah, I think, dude, that you are thinking the right way. But I think no matter how much you break down the coyotes, one on each side is always going to be best. That's just my personal opinion from experience and talking with guys that if you've ever seen Randy Smith's video, Combines and Coyotes, up in, it sounds like the same kind of terrain you're talking about, he most always sets one side or the other unless he just can't get across. And he catches a lot of doubles by doing that. So, yeah, dude, I think you're right on. Just remember to always keep an open mind and keep your eyes on the ground. And keep thinking like you're thinking, because I think you're definitely on the right track. Now, the other one, let's find this one real quick. Nope, that's the same one. It's talking about mud. I'm looking, guys. Okay. All right, this is from KS. Hi Clint, my name is, I live in Southeast Texas, right on Louisiana line. Oh man, there's a lot of fur there. I'm new to trapping 3 years in. I was wondering if you might be able to make a podcast on keeping footholds working in rain or in the mud. I know the simplest solutions would be snares, but I'm wanting to run footholds. A lot of people touch on the subject, but never heard anyone really break it down where the newer trapper can understand it well. Also was wondering if you had any tips for trapping large pine plantations. We have predators, but not overabundance. I work a lot, so normally I run traps about 4 days in pool. Any help would be appreciated, and I thank you for all your educational content and what you do for the trapping industry. Tight change, brother. Okay, KS. The simplest way, okay, let me start with rule number one setting predator traps in a very wet and humid environment like you're at. You're basically in Louisiana, don't take that the wrong way, but the weather's the same. I know Texas is its own thing, but eastern Texas, right up against that, you know, you're still in the swamps and in the pines and the, you know, all that. It's you got to learn to trap the way people trap in Louisiana, not what you see the western guys doing in more of the desert environments of Texas. Rule number one, you have to look at where you put your trap that water will not run there when it rains. Now, that's easier said than done, because a lot of times you get excited over seeing, you know, a big clump of grass and, you know, there's some structure there that you want to set and different things. But go out, and I don't know how old you are. I don't know how much time you spend in the woods. I don't know how much you've really looked at water, how it flows when it rains. But it's always going to go downhill. And any type of dip or divot or any type of structure of that land that's down any amount of bit is the last place you want to put a trap in your environment. The last place. When I was trapping over on the Mexican border in Texas, I didn't have to worry about it because maybe one day out of 3 months it would cause a problem. But where you're at is totally different. So when you're running your traps, I really suggest one or two times you get a line out and you wait till one of them gully washers is coming. If you've got a way to get into your equipment with a vehicle, four-wheeler, whatever you're doing, suck up the rain, suck up being wet, suck up all that, and go look at your sets in the rain as it's raining. If they're automatically filling up with water, that's the wrong spot to put a trap. If there's water flowing over your trap and taking the dirt and stuff away with it because it's not as hard as the rest of the dirt, that's the wrong place to put a trap. This seems really simple, but until you get it in your head and you can just quickly look at the ground and realize what the water is going to do, it's not as simple, because I've been around a lot of guys that know this, and I've screwed up on this too, where as soon as it rains, almost everything is out of commission. Not so much because of what's around the trap, but because of where the traps were put because of convenience. A big example of this, let's say in your pine plantation, they grade the roads every now and then. Well, there's the road's gonna be a little bit lower than the sides. And when there's any type of elevation at all, you're going to have a side hill coming down and meeting the road. If you put a dirt hole right on the side of the road, right where it starts coming up from the grader, it's easier to dig. You got great dirt to deal with when it's dry. The first time it rains, that's where all the water is going to pull up. That's not a very good place to set where you're at. You're better off going up a foot off of the road on that side hill and putting a dirt hole in straight in, not down, not on a 45, but straight in. And you can dig your hole straight in and rain can't get it. And then you can actually bed your trap in, and what rain hits it is immediately going to flow off of it, but it's not going to stop there. If you follow what I'm saying. So that's a very easy one to look at. So in your type environment, I would look for any height that you can get and set on the height. That'll save you a lot. So you don't ever set in low spots in a type of environment like you, because it's going to rain and it's going to take you out of business. Okay, that's like rule number one. Rule number two is breaking down what you're saying about working in the rain and mud. You're gonna get rain, brother. You live where it rains a lot. We get about 66 inches of rain here in Tennessee. In the winter, we probably get about 35 to 40 inches of that. So we get a lot of rain here too. But dude, you're almost like in a jungle environment down there, the way it rains. So the rain is going to happen. The mud is the issue, correct? That's what the problem is. It's mud. What makes mud? Can we get away? We can't get away from the rain. Can we get away from the mud? Yes, we can. If you use dirt, especially after you sift it in, even if you pack it, I mean, you're like the master packer of traps. It's never going to be as hard as undisturbed ground, even though it feels like that up top. So when water comes across that, it starts seeping in everything, and it turns your trap bed into basically a mud pit. And that's probably what you're seeing, and I know it's frustrating. So we can't stop the water. Can we stop the mud? Mud is dirt and water. Gumbo and water. Clay and water. Not so much sand and water, but any type of soil that's got a clay structure into it, not to get too much into soil structures and stuff. Well, if soil and water is the problem, don't put soil back around your trap. This is why I like using peat moss. When you have really dry peat moss, you've got about 7 to 10, sometimes 20 days, depending on the amount of rain and how much moisture is in the ground, before that starts leaching water back into the peat moss. Peat moss is, I think the term is called hydrophobic. It repels water until it can't anymore. So you put it in dry, and even after a 2-inch rain, you can go back to the trap the next day and take your top coat of soil off, and it's going to be just dry. I mean, like abnormally dry to everything else. And your trap will fire through it very well. Now, here's the thing about peat moss. You can put some in the bed of your trap if you're worried about freezing. I'm not sure that's really an issue where you're at. But if it is, you can put just I'm talking a 16th inch of layer of peat moss in the bottom, because it's fluffy and it's not going to bed right if you do too much. You could bed your trap in that. Then you take a handful of peat moss, and this is why you need to have pan tension so you don't go catching yourself all the time, and you're going to drop it right on the pan. The only place you need to think of this, if you've got a daughter, or think of someone's daughter or your niece, the only place that peat moss is allowed to go is inside the jaws. If you allow very much to get on the jaws or in the scissor jaws where the levers and the jaws come together, you're going to have problems. Think of it kind of like if you get too much peat moss on this, your daughter or niece or whoever that you care about that's a female is going to get pregnant from a piece of crap guy. You don't let it happen. So you only let the peat moss fall on the pan, and then you move it back and forth till it falls over the pan, and then you put enough on there till it's level with the jaws and the pan. But it's just in the pan. I mean, it's just in the jaws. It's not on top of the scissors. You just don't take a big wad down there and feather it out, because when the jaws come up, if you got too much peat moss, it's going to impede the jaws from closing. Bad. That's bad. Then you can top coat it with some regular stuff. If you're in an area that's got a lot of sand, collect you a lot of sand, get some peat moss and some buckwheat hulls, and make you a big pile. I'm talking a big pile, somewhere you can put a tarp over it and it's going to stay drier in the building, or in 55-gallon trash cans or whatever. Mix that up. It looks really natural when you get the peat moss in the buckwheat holes, which are also, they don't absorb water. And if you're not worrying about any type of freezing, just use that mixture to bed your traps in and coat your bed, because it's not going to turn into mud. We don't have any dirt in that. So keep that in mind, that you can use sand, peat moss. So use like a half sand, or so it'd be like a third sand, third peat moss, and third buckwheat holes, and it looks really natural if you're in an area that has sand. So that's one thing you can do. The other thing that is, keep in mind, why in a very wet environment do people think they have to put dirt around their trap? You live in an area that's got a lot of vegetation. Or in the plantations, you've got a lot of pine straw. So you can take that pine straw and you can like stick it in put a bunch of it inside of a trash can and get a big, strong, powerful weed eater with some good cord on there and beat the living piss out of that till it's like just broken up pieces of pine straw. And you can use it just like peat moss. Except there's no reason to do a top coat if you're in pine plantations, because pine needles are everywhere. If you're around grass in the summer, rake up a bunch of grass clippings, dry them out on your driveway, takes 4 or 5 days, put them in canvas bags like fur bags, and I've got them sitting up under my shed, and whenever I need a new bag, I just go grab a new bag, and I'll put peat moss down just to make sure nothing gets under the trap, and I'll scatter some of that dry grass on top. Coyotes do not pay attention to it. But what I've done is I've kept the mud out of the equation, because mud is a problem. If it's really grassy where you're at, say like you're blind setting a trail, very carefully dig out your trap bed without making a mess, just big enough, and this takes practice, to get your trap in. That's why it's good to get used to the traps you're going to be using, so you got a lot of muscle memory. Bed that, just dig it big enough to get it down in where it's under the ground. Get it really tight in there, and then just scatter some grass on top. Then it doesn't matter how much it rains. If you come back and say some of the grass got washed away, just spread a little bit more on top. You can't get away from the rain, brother, but you can get away from the mud. So that's what I would say your mission is to get used to using things that don't make mud. Now, tips on trapping in pine plantations. If you're running your traps every 4 days and pulling them, you're missing a lot of coyotes, but if you're working, there's nothing you can do about it, so don't get upset about that. You're probably going to have one good day of catches, which will be the third or fourth day, and that's probably going to be about it. Now, if you can go back to those same places, check out Expand-A-Pan. They have a product that you can put over the pan and pin it down, and then when you come back after you work, like if you're working on oil rigs or something, if that's what you're doing, you can just take this plate off and you're right back in business. It's pretty handy. It saves a tremendous amount of time. You can do the same thing with laying plywood down, but you need to drill some holes in there and get some spikes just so a coyote can't just kick it and it moves out of the way. Now you got a live trap and you're not going to be there for 4 days. So Expand-A-Pan's actually come up with this product. I'm top of my head, I'm trying to figure out what he called it. But it's a slick thing. You can do it with anything that can go over the trap without setting it off, and a coyote can't get down to the trap. Even if they work the set, that's okay. You just change up some bait or something like that. They'll get used to coming there because nothing happened before. The metal on the ground is not going to scare a coyote. He's probably not going to step on it anyway. But he'd probably still work the trap. Now, in big pine plantations, yes, I've trapped those. Those can be very frustrating. Where your biggest catchers are going to be is where the smaller trees are at. So if it's all great big pine trees, basically the only thing you can do is set the roads when you see signs or where you got crossroads and stuff like that. But what you want to try to find is the stuff that's it's not as big yet. So you've got a lot of undergrowth. That's where your prey animals are going to be. That's where every predator is going to be going. Bobcats, fox, gray fox, coyotes. So if you've got a mixture of sizes, go to the smallest, thickest ones first and set those up. And then if you've got time, you can set some of the roads up in the bigger ones unless you happen to see a lot of sign. Because the bigger the trees are, with the less undergrowth of the trees, you almost have to think of that like it's a plowed field with nothing on it. There's very few prey animals that are in those. But when you get to the places like in dips and ditches and stuff where you have a lot of smaller bushes, trees, brambles, stuff like that, that's where your predators are going to be looking for because that's where the food's at. So concentrate on the smallest trees and then work your way up to the biggest trees depending on your time and the amount of equipment you've got. If it's all big, it's you got to go off sign and crossroads and more of the more generic style of trapping. But if you've got those small places, you know, because they cut trees and they plant trees, and you know, when they first plant the trees, there's not very much, but in like 2 or 3 years after that, for about 6-7 years, man, that's predator heaven right there. And then as soon as it gets so big that the canopy shades out all the undergrowth, well, there's not a whole bunch of stuff living there anymore. That's just the way it is. So, brother, I hope that helps you. I hope that helped anybody out there that's maybe thinking about some of the same stuff. Go have fun trapping. Enjoy being outside. Be prepared for this crazy world we live in. And enjoy your family and enjoy your time outdoors. And I will talk to y'all next week. See you.